This article is brought to you by the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time, The Black Book of Eamon Blackthorne. Because the right words, at the right moment, change everything. How to stop minimizing toxic traits when everyone around you thinks they are normal. See harmful behavior clearly, even when the people around you cannot. In short, you can stop minimizing toxic traits by learning to trust your own observations, name what you see with precision, and act before the group's silence becomes your silence too. Track patterns over time, not just single incidents that feel easy to dismiss. Name the specific behavior clearly before you attempt any response. Act on what you know, even when the room around you offers no confirmation. Definition: minimizing toxic traits is the act of downplaying or dismissing harmful behavioral patterns, often because the surrounding group treats them as normal or acceptable. It is the gap between noticing that something is wrong and allowing yourself to believe it. I watched a good team fall apart once because everyone was too polite to name what was happening. One senior manager interrupted people mid-sentence, claimed credit for others' work, and met every piece of honest feedback with a cold silence that lasted for days. People noticed. They talked about it quietly, in car parks and corridors. But in the room, nobody said a word. Minimizing toxic traits was the unspoken policy. The team told itself it was just his style, that you had to know how to handle him, that things were not so bad. Within 18 months, four of the strongest people had left, and the team never recovered its footing. That is the cost of minimizing. And it is a cost paid slowly, so slowly that you rarely see it coming until the damage is done. Why toxic traits are so easy to dismiss. The difficulty is not a failure of intelligence. It is a feature of how groups work. When harmful behavior appears gradually and consistently, it stops reading as harmful. It starts reading as normal. The first time a colleague publicly belittles someone's idea, you feel the discomfort. By the 15th time, you have absorbed it as part of the landscape. Your nervous system has adapted, or judgment has drifted. Add to that the social pressure of a group that is not reacting, and your doubt compounds. If nobody else is raising an eyebrow, you start to question your own reading of the room. You wonder if you are too sensitive. You worry that speaking up will make you the difficult one. The behavior does not change, but your perception of it does. And that shift is the whole problem. This is also why psychological safety matters so much. In environments where people feel safe to name what they see, toxic traits get surfaced early. In environments where safety is low, those same traits get buried under politeness and fear. What needs to be true before you begin? Before you can address toxic traits, two things must be in place. First, you need clarity about what you have actually observed. Not feelings about a person, not a general unease, but specific incidents you can describe. What was said, what was done, what the impact was. Vague discomfort is real, but it is not yet a foundation for action. Second, you need to trust that your discomfort is data, not weakness. Many people enter this process already apologizing for their own perceptions. That self-doubt is understandable, but it will undermine everything that follows. Your observations are valid. They do not require a group consensus before they count. A process for seeing clearly and acting on it. Step 1. Build a record before you build a case. The first thing you must do is write things down. Not to build a legal file, but to protect your own clarity. After any incident that leaves you unsettled, write a brief note. Date, what happened, who was present, and how it landed. Do this consistently for 2 to 4 weeks. The record does something important. It counters the natural human tendency to minimize in retrospect. Memory softens edges. Written records do not. When you can read your notes and see the same pattern appearing on 8 different dates, you stop questioning whether it is real. That record becomes your anchor. Step 2. Name the behavior, not the person. Before you can address what you're seeing, you need language for it that is precise and behavior-focused. Not Marcus is toxic. That is a character verdict, and it will put anyone on the defensive. Instead, Marcus interrupts people before they finish their point, and when feedback is offered, he responds with silence that lasts for the rest of the meeting. One describes a person, the other describes behavior you can point to. This distinction matters enormously. Behavior can be addressed. Character verdicts trigger defensiveness and get you nowhere. Write the behavior down in 1 or 2 clean sentences before you take any further step. Step 3. Test your perception with one trusted person. You do not need to take a poll. You need one conversation with someone you trust, someone who has witnessed the same environment and who will be honest with you. Not to get permission to feel what you feel. To pressure test your description, share what you have written. Ask, does this match what you have observed? If the answer is yes, you have external confirmation. If the answer is no, you have information worth considering. Keep the conversation specific. You are not asking them to join your side. You are asking them to help you see clearly. Starting a difficult conversation with the right person, framed in the right way, is itself a skill worth practicing before you take the issue further. Step 4. Choose your response level. Not every toxic trait requires the same response. You need to match your approach to the severity and the context. There are 3 levels to consider. Number 1. Direct, private feedback to the person displaying the behavior. This is appropriate when the behavior is consistent, but not severe, and when you have a working relationship with the person. Number 2. Naming the behavior in the moment, briefly, and without heat. For example, let me finish that thought. Or I want to make sure we hear the whole idea before we respond. This works for patterns of interruption or dismissal. Number 3. Escalation to someone with authority when the behavior is causing measurable harm and direct feedback has either failed or is not safe to attempt. Decide your level before you act. Attempting level 3 before you have tried level 1 rarely lands well. Step 5. Deliver feedback using a direct script. If you choose to speak directly to the person, use a structure that is clear, non-accusatory, and grounded in the specific. Try this. I want to raise something with you, because I think it matters. I have noticed that in team meetings, when someone shares a concern, the conversation tends to move on before they have finished. Last Tuesday it happened twice, and I could see it stopped people from contributing. I would like us to talk about how we make space for that. Notice what this does. It names a behavior, not a trait. It gives a specific example. It describes the impact, and it opens a door rather than slamming one. You are not accusing, you are observing and inviting. For more red mid language, you can adapt the scripts for addressing team members who are undermining group synergy offer several practical frameworks you can apply directly. Step 6. Hold your ground when the group pushes back. This is where most people lose their footing. You raise the concern, and the group response is a collective shrug. That is just how things work here. You are reading too much into it. Everyone gets treated the same way. Here is the truth of it. When a toxic trait has been normalized, the group will often resist the person who names it, not the behavior itself. That resistance does not mean you are wrong. It means the normalization is deep. Hold to your record. Hold to your specific language. Refuse to be drawn into a debate about whether your perception is valid. You are not debating feelings. You are describing documented behavior and its impact. The pattern of avoiding difficult conversations is exactly what allowed the toxic trait to take root in the first place. Do not repeat it. Step 7. Protect yourself if the environment cannot be changed. Sometimes the honest answer is that the environment will not change, at least not on your timeline. The toxic trait is too entrenched, the group too accommodating, the power structure too skewed. In that case, your job is to protect your own judgment. Be clear about what you can and cannot control. Set firm limits on how the behavior is allowed to affect your work. And make a clear-eyed decision about how long you're willing to stay in a situation that does not respond to reasonable effort. This is not defeat. It is wisdom. Knowing when to keep pushing and when to step back is part of mastering any difficult situation. Pay particular attention to passive-aggressive behavior, which is one of the more insidious toxic traits to navigate, because it hides behind plausible deniability. When the whole team has normalized the behavior. In remote or hybrid settings, toxic traits spread faster and become normalized more easily because the informal moments where someone might quietly pull you aside and say, "Did you notice that?" simply do not exist. What you lose in a remote environment is the ambient social signal, the shared glance, the moment of collective discomfort that confirms you are not imagining things. That absence increases isolation and accelerates self-doubt. Compensate deliberately. Schedule brief one-to-one check-ins with colleagues you trust. Use written communication to create the record you would otherwise build through observation. Name patterns explicitly in writing, because written records carry more weight in remote settings than they do face-to-face. Conversation avoidance creates a compounding cost in any team, but in remote environments the cost accumulates invisibly. What gets avoided in a team chat is simply never raised again. Be the person who raises it. A quick note before we continue. Most people leave the hardest conversations for last and regret the words they used when they finally had them. The best-selling book Say It Right Every Time gives you 115 tested scripts for those exact moments, the ones that shape careers, relationships, and how people remember you. Get your copy at imanblackthorne.com. Now, back to the article. The mistakes people make when they finally speak up. The mistake: waiting until the behaviour has become a crisis before acting. Why it happens: people hope the situation will resolve on its own and avoid the discomfort of being the one who speaks first. What to do instead? Act on the pattern, not on a single incident. 3 clear examples over 2 weeks is enough. You do not need to wait for an explosion. The mistake: framing the feedback as a personal attack on character. Why it happens: frustration builds over time and comes out as a verdict rather than an observation. What to do instead? Return to specific, behavioural language. Write your words down before the conversation so you do not drift into character judgments under pressure. The mistake: seeking the full group's agreement before acting. Why it happens: the group silence feels like evidence against your reading, so you wait for consensus that never comes. What to do instead? One trusted witness is enough. You do not need a majority vote. The behavior is what it is, regardless of how many people have chosen not to see it. The mistake: dropping the subject after the first pushback. Why it happens: the resistance feels like rejection, and retreat feels safer than persistence. What to do instead? Expect the first pushback. Prepare a calm, specific response to it in advance. Knowing what you will say when someone says you're overreacting is part of the preparation, not an afterthought. The synergy debt that accumulates from unchallenged toxic traits is real and significant. Every week you wait is another week of compounded damage to trust and collaboration. Your toxic traits reality check. Use this before any conversation about a toxic trait you've identified. Number 1. Have I written down at least 3 specific incidents with dates and details? Number 2. Can I describe the behavior in one sentence without using character judgments? Number 3. Have I spoken to one trusted person who has also witnessed the pattern? Number 4. Have I chosen the right response level for the severity of what I'm seeing? Number 5. Do I have a short, clear script ready for the conversation? Number 6. Am I prepared to hold my position if I get pushback? Number 7. Do I know what I will do if the environment proves unwilling to change? If you can answer yes to all 7, you are ready. If you cannot, return to the step where the gap is and do the work there first. Frequently asked questions. What does minimizing toxic traits mean? Minimizing toxic traits means downplaying or dismissing harmful behavior, often because the environment around you treats it as normal or acceptable. It happens when you notice something is wrong, but convince yourself you're overreacting. Over time, minimization allows toxic behavior to deepen and spread unchallenged. How do you recognize toxic traits when they feel normal? You recognize them by tracking how interactions make you feel over time, not just in the moment. Toxic traits leave a pattern: repeated discomfort, eroded trust, and a persistent sense that something is off. Your body often registers harm before your mind names it. Why do people normalize toxic behavior in groups? Groups normalize toxic behavior because challenging it creates social risk. When enough people stay silent, silence becomes the group standard. New members adopt the group standard without questioning it, and anyone who rejects risks being seen as the problem rather than the behavior itself. How do you respond to toxic traits without damaging your relationships? You respond by addressing the specific behavior, not the person's character. Be direct about what you observed and what impact it had. This approach separates the behavior from the individual, which makes it harder for the other person to dismiss your concern as a personal attack. What is the difference between a toxic trait and a bad habit? A bad habit causes inconvenience or minor friction. A toxic trait causes consistent harm, erodes trust, suppresses honest communication, or makes people feel unsafe. The key difference is the pattern and the impact. Toxic traits repeat and worsen without intervention. Bad habits can shift with simple feedback. How do you trust yourself when everyone else thinks the behavior is fine? You trust yourself by building a record. Write down specific incidents with dates and details. When you can read a list of 20 incidents over 6 months, the pattern becomes undeniable. Your own documented evidence is a stronger anchor than the collective opinion of people who have normalized the behavior. The work is yours to do. Nobody is going to hand you permission to trust your own eyes. In my experience, the people who wait for that permission never get it, because groups that have normalized harm do not tend to give the signal that it is now safe to name it. You have to decide that what you have seen is real, that it matters, and that you are willing to say so. That takes courage. I know it does. I've stood in rooms where the silence was thick enough to cut, and said the thing nobody else was willing to say, and felt the full weight of that moment. It is not comfortable. But stopping the cycle of minimizing toxic traits is not a comfortable process. It is a necessary one, and it is yours to begin. Thank you for listening. If this article helped, the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time will take you the rest of the way. 115 scripts ready to use whenever you need them. Visit emonblickthorne.com to get your copy.